Welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're plunging headfirst into the incredible story of Cannabis sativa L, a plant that's been tangled up with human history for, well, millennia, sparking endless debate and driving innovation. Our mission for you is to dig into all the research you've provided, you know, from ancient botanical classifications and cutting-edge genetic studies to incredible archaeological finds and historical medical texts. We're going to try and uncover cannabis's surprising journey, distill its most important facets, and maybe reveal why this one plant continues to fascinate and, frankly, challenge us so much.
And this deep dive is truly an exploration, because the more you look into Cannabis sativa, the more complex its story becomes. It's quite something. We'll be looking at its surprising identity. Is it one species or many? A real puzzle. Then its ancient, debated origins and the remarkable biological characteristics that made it so valuable throughout history. The diversity of our sources, you know, from forensic science to historical botanical surveys, they really offer us multiple, sometimes converging, sometimes conflicting perspectives that reveal just how deep this plant's roots go in our past.
Okay, let's unpack this. For a plant so globally recognized, its very scientific definition has actually been a source of, well, contention for centuries. What does modern science tell us about whether cannabis is one species or several? It feels like this has been a really thorny issue for botanists.
Oh, it absolutely has been. A huge debate. Historically, cannabis was initially defined as many different species or subspecies. This was mainly based on how different populations looked, you know, their physical appearance, their morphology, and the varying ratios of the chemical compounds they produced. But today, the scientific consensus has largely shifted. Most botanists and geneticists now accept it as a single species. Cannabis sativa.
So what really changed that understanding? Was it like the rise of new genetic tools?
Exactly, that was the game changer. What's truly fascinating here is how our understanding of a plant changes as scientific tools evolve. Early cultivation studies hinted at it, sure, but genetic analyses, especially comparing things like chloroplast and mitochondrial DNA, really solidified this single species concept. One study, for instance, looked at hundreds of different cannabis plants from all over the world, drug types, fiber types, hemp, even wild varieties. And despite their vastly different appearances, they found surprisingly little fundamental genetic variation, just six main haplotypes across all those samples. This strongly supports the idea that cannabis is a single, highly variable, highly hybridized species. It's a bit of a master of disguise, you know? Appears different, but shares the same deep genetic roots.
That's incredible. A master of disguise. I like that. And the debate itself has deep historical roots, doesn't it? I see names like Fuchs, who used Cannabis sativa way back in 1542, even before Linnaeus officially named it in 1753. Then Lamarck described Cannabis indica in 1785, and Januszewski described Cannabis ruderalis in 1924. So for a long time, we had these two basic camps. The one species folks, like Ernest Small, versus the multiple species proponents.
Exactly. And the plot thickens with more nuanced genetic work, like you mentioned. Take Hilling's research, for example. He did this extensive genetic analysis of, I think, 157 cannabis samples, looking at their chemical makeup and genetic family tree, chemotaxonomy. His work revealed two major gene pools or genetic groups. One he called sativa, which included plants from Eastern Europe and Central Asian hemp varieties. The second, an indica gene pool, encompassed strains from the Far East, drug-type plants from Southern Asia, Africa, South America, and even those wide leaflet varieties from places like Afghanistan and Pakistan. He even suggested a third gene pool for Cannabis ruderalis from Central Asia. Still some debate there.
Right, so even within this single species framework, there's still incredible diversity. Almost like breeds of dogs, maybe. Different looks, same species. And another molecular study, this time focusing on chloroplast DNA markers from over 600 cannabis individuals, also identified three distinct genetic groups. And these showed clear distribution patterns based on latitude, especially in China, high, middle, low latitude groups. This study, while acknowledging the ongoing debate, also concluded that cannabis should be considered a single species, Cannabis sativa L, but crucially further divided into three subspecies. C. sativa subs SP sativa, C. sativa subs SP dot indica, and C. sativa subs SP dot ruderalis. It's almost like science is giving us a more refined family tree, showing these major branches of the same single plant.
Precisely. That's a great way to put it. And this is where human definitions often interact, sometimes awkwardly, with scientific ones. Think about the legal distinction for industrial hemp. In places like the EU and Canada, it's often defined legally as having less than waste 0.3% THC. That's a regulatory line we've drawn, right? A human definition driven by policy or utility rather than a strict natural biological one. Doesn't mean it's a totally separate kind of plant in nature. It just highlights how our perception and interaction with the plant are often shaped by our own needs and rules, sometimes diverging from pure botanical classification.
Okay, so we've wrestled with its identity, a single, very diverse species. Okay. Got it. Now, what about its origins? I always sort of pictured cannabis originating in one specific spot, maybe Central Asia, but the research suggests a much more sprawling ancient story, doesn't it? This is where it gets really interesting.
It truly is fascinating. Generally, yes, the origin is often pinpointed in Central and East Asia, a huge area, spreading from the Caspian Sea and Himalayas across to China and Siberia. It's definitely one of the oldest domesticated plants we know.
But some research sought even greater precision for that Asian origin, using things like fossil pollen as a kind of ancient time capsule. And get this, the oldest cannabis-consistent pollen actually dates back an astonishing 19.6 million years ago in northwestern China.
19.6 million is mind-bogglingly old. And if we look at genetic timelines comparing cannabis with its closest relative, hops, humulus, you know, for beer, the molecular clock estimates they diverged around 27.8 million years ago. That's an incredibly deep history for this plant family.
Wow, so it's been around for ages.
It really paints a picture of extreme antiquity. That particular research, the one finding the 19.6 million-year-old pollen, deduces the northeastern Tibetan plateau near Qinghai Lake as the likely cannabis center of origin. Interestingly, this area also hosted Asia's first steppe community, a vast grassland ecosystem. Seems like its natural habitat. From there, cannabis seems to have dispersed westward, reaching Europe by about 6 million years ago, and then eastward to eastern China by maybe 1.2 million years ago. Evidence of cannabis pollen in India appeared much later, around 32,600 years ago, and the earliest archaeological evidence for actual human use, those tiny subfossil seeds and fruits, was found in Japan dating to about 10,000 BCE, followed closely by China.
Fascinating. So Tibet first, then spreading out over millions of years. And another genetic analysis using chloroplast markers identified a specific genetic signature called haplotype B as a common ancestor of both cannabis and hops. And this signature was traced back to Yunnan province in southern China, further suggesting Yunnan as a significant region, perhaps another key area, for the genus cannabis's earliest emergence.
Right, so maybe not just one spot, but a broader region. Now here's where the plot thickens even more. Not all research points to an Asia-only origin. Some studies challenge this conventional wisdom by looking really closely at European fossil pollen records, and they found evidence consistent with wild-type cannabis sativa pollen appearing throughout Europe during ancient ice ages, the late glacial, and even warmer interglacial periods, often in steppe and dry tundra landscapes, which fits its profile. In fact, cannabis sativa is sometimes classified botanically as an Arctic forb, meaning it can tolerate conditions incredibly far north, like 68 degrees north latitude. This suggests it might have actually been indigenous to some parts of Europe, not just introduced much later by humans.
So it could have been growing wild in Europe for millions of years, completely independently of human influence. That's a huge shift in perspective. And then cultivated hemp shows up later, archaeologically speaking, appearing in the Pontic Caspian Steppe, linked to significant copper and Bronze Age cultures like the Amnaya.
Indeed. So you have this potential deep ancient presence and then later clear evidence of cultivation. And adding to this complexity, other molecular evidence, like that Zhang study we mentioned earlier with the three haplogroups, it specifically challenges the prevalent Central Asia origin hypothesis. It suggests that the low latitude genetic group found more in places like Yunnan might be the earliest divergent lineage, implying a probable origin, or at least a very early divergence center, in those low-latitude regions of China.
Okay, my head's spinning a little. Tibet, Yunnan, maybe even Europe.
Exactly. So what does this all mean for us? Is there a single definitive center of origin, or did cannabis perhaps emerge and diverge in multiple locations across Eurasia over millions of years? The evidence, especially when you combine genetics and paleobotany, suggests a really fascinating interplay. You probably had ancient widespread wild populations, and then much later, maybe multiple independent domestication events by humans in different parts of Eurasia. It's less a single birthplace and more a sprawling ancient family tree with roots potentially all over the place.
Right. A much messier, but maybe more realistic picture. So considering this plant's incredible journey and its biological adaptability, how did humans actually interact with it throughout history? What made cannabis so incredibly valuable to ancient societies that it became what some sources call a triple-use crop?
Well, let's start with its fundamental biology, because that really explains its versatility. It sets the stage. Cannabis sativa is typically dioecious. That just means it usually produces male and female flowers on separate plants. Think of them as, you know, male and female trees. However, some individuals can be monoecious, having both male and female flowers on the same plant. For commercial production of medical cannabis these days, growers often focus on genetically female plants, getting rid of the males, to maximize flower quality and cannabinoid production. Those unpollinated female flowers are key. It's an annual herbaceous plant, meaning it completes its whole life cycle from seed to seed in a single growing season.
And its physical structure sounds almost purpose-built for its many uses. The root, the stem.
Absolutely. Take its root system. It has a strong taproot that goes deep into the soil, which makes it incredibly resilient, especially in drier conditions. And here's a surprising little fact. The roots are the only major part of the plant that do not contain those psychoactive substances like THC. Then you have the stem or stalk. Industrial hemp varieties, the ones grown primarily for fiber, are generally much taller, longer than medicinal varieties. The stem itself starts round when young, then becomes sort of four or even six-sided, gets woody near the ground, and becomes hollow in the upper parts, which is actually perfect for processing into fiber later on.
And those iconic leaves, the hand-shaped ones, they're instantly recognizable.
They really are. They're palmate, meaning like the palm of a hand, spirally arranged on the stem, typically with 5 to 7 sharply serrated leaflets, though that number can vary. Their size, number of leaflets, and even the shape can vary significantly based on where the plant grows, the ecological setting, and which specific cultivar or variety it is. And then there are the flowers. Male flowers form these sort of open-branched clusters called panicles. Female flowers form denser, spike-like or branching clusters. Female flowers are typically hairy and sticky, covered in tiny outgrowths called trichomes. That's the important part for cannabinoids. After pollination by wind, the female calyx, part of the flower, develops into a small protective incubator for the developing seed. And get this, a single male flower bloom can produce a truly massive amount of pollen, around 350,000 pollen grains.
Goodness, 350,000. No wonder if some regions consider it a major allergen. That's an astonishing amount of pollen.
It really is. And that pollen, being primarily wind-pollinated, anemophily is the technical term, can travel incredibly long distances, over 300 kilometers carried by the wind. The fruit of cannabis is technically an eschene. It's a small, hard-shelled fruit containing a single seed. People often confuse it with the seed itself because of that hard outer layer, the pericarp, which has a distinctive network of veins on its surface. Now, those trichomes we mentioned, those tiny, often sticky glands, especially on the female flowers and surrounding leaves, they are crucial. They come in different types, but the glandular ones are essentially the little factories for synthesizing terpenes, the aromatic compounds, and cannabinoids like THC and CBD. Most cannabinoids are concentrated in these female flower structures, specifically the bracts. You find only minimal amounts in other parts like the seeds, seed oil, pollen, roots, or even the main stem and leaf tissues.
Okay, so armed with all these remarkable biological characteristics, deep roots, strong stems, useful seeds, and potent flower tops, it's really no wonder cannabis has been utilized for at least 10,000 years. It truly earned its title as a triple-use crop for humanity. First, as food. Its fruits, or seeds as we usually call them, are a valuable source of protein and essential fatty acids. We see archaeological evidence of their consumption dating back to 10,000 BCE in Japan. Second, for fiber. The plant's bast cells from the stem provide remarkably strong fibers for making cordage, rope, and textiles. Carbonized hemp fibers have been found dating to 5,600 years before present in Henan Province, China. That's over 7,500 years ago. We even have evidence of ancient hemp-breeding sites, places where they soak the stalks in water to separate the fibers. These show up in pollen records as spikes in cannabis pollen, with the oldest such site dating to 5,000 years before present in the Yangtze River Delta.
And third, of course, for its psychoactive and medicinal properties. Its flowering tops yield those potent cannabinoids which humans have used for medicinal, shamanic, and recreational purposes for millennia. Archaeological evidence of this specific drug use dates back at least 2,700 years in the Xinjiang region of Western China.
Yeah, the origins of that psychoactive use are particularly intriguing. It's almost like archaeological detectives uncovering ancient rituals. The earliest directly dated and scientifically verified evidence for ritual cannabis smoking comes from the Jurzenkel Cemetery, around 500 BCE, in the eastern Pamirs region of Western China. high up in the mountains, chemical analysis of residues scraped from inside wooden braziers, like incense burners found in tombs, showed high levels of CBN. Now, CBN is basically what THC degrades into over time, especially with heat. So high CBN implies the original cannabis plants burned in those braziers had high THC levels.
Exactly, which suggests that these ancient people were either intentionally cultivating and selecting for potent specimens, or perhaps more likely initially, they recognized and specifically gathered wild varieties that were naturally high in THC. Maybe due to high elevation stressors like lower temperatures and strong UV light, which can sometimes boost cannabinoid production.
Right. Either way, they knew what they were looking for.
This discovery strongly indicates cannabis was being smoked, or at least heated to inhale fumes, as part of ritual and/or religious activities back then. Other related evidence includes a cannabis burial shroud found covering a body in the Jaya Cemetery in Turpan, dating to around 800-400 BCE, and the nearby Yanghai tombs, also around 500 BCE, contain caches of dried cannabis parts, leaves, and flowers with elevated secondary compounds. But interestingly, there was no evidence of burning.
Suggesting maybe oral consumption, like eating it or making a drink?
Possibly, yes. Historically, psychoactive cannabis use involved both oral ingestion and inhaling fumes. The Greek historian Herodotus, writing in the 5th century BCE, famously documented cannabis fumigation by the Scythians, nomadic people of the Eurasian steppe. He described them putting cannabis onto hot stones and inhaling the vapors inside small tents. Intense. And interestingly, back at Jozankal, cannabis offerings were found in burials of people with a varying social status. Not just the elites, this might indicate the popularization of ritual cannabis smoking, perhaps moving from elites down to common people over time in that specific region.
It's incredible how far back this goes, and its medicinal history and global spread are just as vast and compelling. It's quite possible that cannabis is one of the oldest cultivated plants, with some researchers even suggesting a deep coevolutionary relationship with humans. We shaped it. It shaped us. In Egypt, for example, while definitive ancient medical evidence is debated, Napoleon scientists, when they invaded in the early 19th century, certainly noted its intoxicating effects among the locals. And later in the 1830s, a French physician named Aubert Roche actually used hashish to treat symptoms of the plague. Bold move.
Definitely bold. In ancient Assyria, modern-day Iraq, cuneiform tablets from the 2nd millennium BCE mention a plant, potentially cannabis, sometimes translated as drug for sorrow or even weaving narcotic. It was apparently used as a fumigant, an insecticide, and administered orally, on the skin, and even as an enema for a whole range of conditions. Impotence, neuralgia, spasticity, depression, anxiety. Quite the list. Moving east to Bactria, an ancient Margiana near modern Turkmenistan, physical remnants from the late 3rd or early 2nd millennium BCE suggest the ritual use of cannabis, often found alongside opium poppies and ephedra, possibly as ingredients in the legendary Homa Soma hallucinogenic drink linked to the developing Zoroastrian religion.
India, too, has such a profound history with it. The Atharva Veda, a sacred text dating back to maybe 1600 BCE, mentions cannabis, called bhanga, as one of 5 sacred herbs given to humanity to release from anxiety. It was deeply established in traditional Ayurvedic medicine by around 300-400 BCE. And back to China, that physical evidence from the Yanghai tombs we mentioned dating back 2,500 years. That large cache of cannabis with well-preserved glandular trichomes was found in a shaman's tomb, linking it clearly to the ancient Tocharian-speaking nomadic people of the Tarim Basin.
And in Europe, it's interesting. Renaissance herbalists mainly utilized the native cannabis sativa strains, the hemp varieties, which naturally contain higher CBD and lower THC, good for fiber and maybe some calming effects. But after 1840, Asian cannabis indica strains known for their higher THC content became much more prevalent in European and North American medicine, largely thanks to people bringing knowledge back from colonies like India. Africa also has a long history. Cannabis seems to have been present for at least 2,000 years. It was used in traditional medicine for things like pain, such as headaches by the Zulu people. Archaeologists have even found traces of it in 14th century Ethiopian smoking pipes. The New World, the Americas, seems to be a different story. Evidence suggests cannabis was introduced, likely to Brazil first, in the 15th or 16th century, probably with the transatlantic slave trade. From there, it rapidly spread throughout the Americas. There's no established documentation or archaeological evidence of native cannabis use prior to European arrival.
And certain key figures throughout history were really instrumental in its spread and medical understanding, weren't they? You have Al-Kindi, an Arab philosopher in the 9th century, noting its muscle-relaxant properties. Garcia de Orta, a Portuguese physician in India in the 16th century, observed its effects like causing happiness and stimulating appetite. Sound familiar? But it was really William Brooke O'Shaughnessy, an Irish physician working in Calcutta in the 1830s, whose experiments and publications truly led to the widespread adoption of cannabis extracts in Western medicine for a time. Even as late as 1887, a prominent London physician, Stephen Mackenzie, was reporting success using tincture of Indian hemp for treating chronic daily headaches.
It's quite a journey. And if we connect all this back to the bigger picture, the plant's remarkable biological adaptability allowed it to thrive across incredibly diverse ecological zones, from the Arctic Circle practically down to the tropics. And that adaptability directly influenced its varied and profound uses by humans, fiber here, food there, medicine, ritual use. The fascinating shift, or perhaps parallel development, from its role primarily in fiber and food to becoming a potent psychoactive agent. That's really interesting. Whether driven by conscious human selection for certain traits or maybe accidental discovery due to environmental factors at high altitudes boosting THC, it's a profound example of true coevolution between a plant and our species.
Absolutely. We've journeyed through the really intricate world of cannabis sativa L today, from those surprising scientific debates around its very classification to its fascinating, potentially multi-continental origins stretching back millions of years, and its multifaceted, millennia-long relationship with humanity. It's a plant that has literally woven itself into the fabric of our history in more ways than one.
Yeah, we've seen how genetic evidence and ancient pollen records continue to refine our understanding of its past, revealing it not just as, you know, some useful plant, but as a key player in human, cultural, economic, and even ritualistic development across the globe. It's really a testament to its enduring adaptability and its capacity to continually surprise us with new insights as our scientific tools get better.
So it makes you wonder, what more might this ancient plant reveal about our shared past? We've learned so much already.
Yeah.
And how might truly understanding its natural adaptations and incredibly diverse historical uses shape its future role in medicine, industry, and culture? There's still so much debate. What stands out to you most from this deep dive into cannabis sativa? What's the one thing you'll be thinking about?